Good evening, pinch hitters. It's the evening of Wednesday, the 29th of January, and it's been one of those days where everything that could happen has happened. Nigel Farage's microphone has been turned off in the European Parliament, and Everton have turned down a bid of £85 million for Richarlison. So amidst all the chaos and nonsense in this world, sit back and relax. It's time for the Pinch Hitter Podcast. And we go again. The South Africa England series has finished with England winning 3-1. And myself and Trigger, Terence, are back together. How are you, Terence?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Very, very good indeed. You enjoy the series?
Loved it. Sad to see the back of it. For me, it's been looking forward to it for months because that's Boxing Day. That's Christmas for me. Beautiful. The highlight of it, sitting there with my leftovers and South Africa test all day. But now it's gone. We're on about the 100th of January. And the cricket's gone. This is where it starts bleak for me now.
It's one of those series as well, isn't it? With the timings of the games, with it all starting at 8 a.m. That if you book in for the whole day, you literally miss the whole day's light. So it finishes at like 3:30, 4 o'clock, and it's dark. Your day is gone purely for watching for doing Test cricket. It's not like, you know, when Sri Lanka comes round, it'll be done. It'll be finished by 1 p.m, and the days will be a bit longer by then. It's a very watchable series, particularly when England are competitive.
It is, and we were competitive. South Africa less so, but yeah, such a watchable series. You get a couple of hours in the morning before your day needs to start on the weekends, which is brilliant. Mm-hmm. But also, cricket in South Africa is what everyone wants to see, isn't it?
Absolutely,
fast, bouncy pitches, good seam attacks, batsmen and bowlers both in the game.
Perfect.
Relatively evenly matched sides as well. I don't think, even though England got away from the last test, I think there was good cricket played throughout, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was. It was some excellent bits, and I'm sure we can we'll highlight a few of the top moments from throughout the series. But instead of kind of picking apart each test and let's say, you know, individual players doing this or doing that, for me this was very much the series of the demerit.
Absolutely.
And they went wild, didn't they? The match referees and the ICC, just chucking them around demerit points like confetti. Which was your favourite one?
I mean, plenty to choose from. We've spoken at length about Rabada's.
Absolutely.
Did Jos Buttler actually get a demerit point for his his set two with Philander?
He was definitely docked 15% of his match fee.
Presumably that comes with a demerit point.
I think it does as well, yeah. So let's put that down as a yes as well.
Let's put that down as a yes. But my favourite has got to be Vernon Philander and the eternal demerit point.
Yeah,
that will stand the test of time, that demerit point. And just beautiful that he's been... His lasting memory of Test cricket will be getting called into the match referee's office and writing a cheque for 15% of his match fee just to sign off of Test cricket. Like, is it like his performance in that Test series from the moment he signed his Colpack deal?
Yeah,
just dropped off a cliff to the point where he literally signed off by getting told off. Like, he dropped off so much that his last commitment to playing Test cricket wasn't even playing Test cricket. Like, not only was he not on the pitch, he wasn't even in the dressing room. He was getting a bollocking from the match referee.
And he looked really good at the start of the series, didn't he?
He looked incredible. Like, he looked... No one could believe that he was giving up Test cricket. He was going to sign for Somerset. And then, by the end of it, he was getting abused for being called fat. He couldn't walk. He was getting fined. Like, and Somerset must be thinking, what have we done here? Like, we thought we signed an absolute Rolls Royce. And like, he's just capitulated. He's just absolutely capitulated.
He's gone, hasn't he? He's gone.
But yeah, Rob Key was saying on the debate that he hopes they've got him signed on some sort of performance deal, which is probably now true. But before the series and after that first test, when he had the ball on a string, and
they've been licking their lips, haven't they?
They've been absolutely. They thought they must have got a bargain. It's one of the best just capitulations in performance I've ever seen.
as you say, ended up with a bollocking in the match referee's office. Just, you know, welcome. Well, goodbye to Test cricket from Vernon Philander. And we'll come on to that again a little bit later. I think there's a few other big names who've had big farewells planned, and they've turned into a bit of a miserable send off. At the end of it all. But did you see the final demeritation, let's call it, the awarding of demerit points to Stuart Broad from the final day's play?
No, because interestingly, and this is really interesting,
I'll be the judge.
Relatively, yeah. The Ben Stokes thing, that obviously someone made a conscious decision to replay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he obviously got caught swearing at someone going up the stairs. Yeah. Do we know if the bloke that called him Ginger was actually Ginger?
No, we don't. We do not know. I don't know nothing on this person.
We need to see him, really, just to understand just how funny this is. But that's by the by.
All we know is he has four eyes.
Or do we?
Well, that was what Stokesy said. So yeah. we don't have anything else to go on as yet, but, you know, hopefully we'll
wasn't Jack Leach, was it?
Well, potentially Jack Leach. Might even have been Steve Smith when he was impersonating
Jack Leach. When he was impersonating Jack Leach.
But he wasn't impersonating Jack Leach.
Could have been Vittori.
He was impersonating Chris Rogers. Could have been Vittori.
No, of course.
Many options.
Could have been Edgar Davids.
Could have been, yeah. I'd love it. I would love it if it was Edgar Davids just giving Stokes some
giving Ben Stokes a send-off.
absolutely brilliant. But yeah, the final demerits that ended up Broad's way. So I think, funnily enough, that's the first demerit points he's got.
No, he can't be in
the current time frame.
Oh, okay, that makes more sense.
He might be up to two or whatever it was. But it was. You didn't see it?
No, I didn't, because that was what was interesting. The Stokes thing clearly got replayed, didn't it? Because he didn't get caught the first time. But there's almost no video footage. I can't see any video footage of the Broad Faff Butler kind of debacle, other than just a brief set too. Literally, Faff just goes to walk past Butler, and it looks like he might have hit him or brushed his shoulder.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. I mean, I saw someone claiming on Twitter, you know, they shoulder barged each other. They haven't. Joss has stood still, and Faff has tried to not even get at Broad. He's just tried to walk a little bit closer to Broad because he's the one he's having a conversation with.
Yeah.
So there's much of a muchness. All began with Sam Curran lobbing in a throw. A little bit similar to the Philander one, I guess. And then Broad just like giving a few words. And it, to be fair, it was at that point where Faff and Rassie were going well. And clearly England were like, right, let's try and upset their concentration. Let's do a job on them. Who's the experienced man? Stuart Broad, there it is.
Who's the man for a bit of niggle?
Exactly. You're the man for a bit of niggle, the man who doesn't mind losing 15% of his match fee. And he stood up. So yeah, you didn't miss much. It was more verbals than anything else.
Yeah.
And one thing we do know with Super Sport and their coverage is they will turn up the stump mics. So we certainly got to hear all of it, and we weren't complaining.
Absolutely. I mean, if there's one thing we've learned this over the fantastic banter broadcaster,
yeah,
stump mics right up. Honing in on any sort of niggle, just film that. Just film. I don't even want to watch the cricket. I just want to film the niggle and the swearing and the fighting.
Yeah, I'll tell you it's what.
The funniest bit. What we really want is player cam on Stuart Broad the entire time.
That would be good. That would be good. Just see him just plotting what he's going to be up to. I'd enjoy. I'll raise you on that. I want player cam on Joel Wilson as well. And I'd like to see him. I'd like to see him fully mic'd up, because you never hear the umpire, do you? You hear the third umpire saying, you know, you're now going to have to reverse your decision again, Joel. But you never hear him going over in between the overs and saying to the other umpire, yeah, I was convinced that was going to hit.
Yeah, I don't know what's happening today or every other day of your career.
Yeah,
what you want is Joel Wilson's internal monologue, don't you?
He delivers, and he always does. And there's, you know, there's, as we always love to say, there's a whole pod in the lack of available good umpires. But yeah, long live Joel Wilson, and please let's keep him involved in tests, because it keeps the batsmen honest, it keeps the fielders honest,
and it keeps the Hawkeye blokes in a job.
Keeps the Hawkeye blokes in a job. It increases the over rates. It's just win-win for everybody. So
I've got this theory that when Stuart Broad gets to hell, if he gets to hell, it's just going to be an eternity of hitting middle stump halfway up on someone's pads and not being able to review it. And then he turns around and every single time it's Joel Wilson not giving it out.
And when you say he can't review it, is that because England have already used up their reviews? Or is it a captain like Strauss who's put in place a very strict...
A combination, ideally.
Yeah, okay.
Not that I ever want to see Stuart Broad in hell.
I can see what you mean. It'd be like a recurring nightmare for Stuart, wouldn't it?
Yeah, inability to review all of Joel Wilson. Because it is baffling. And just a lovely symmetry to the fact that the series finished on a Joel Wilson overturned decision.
Exactly. And there was no doubt, there was no question that it was.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
There was no question that once they reviewed it, it was going to show up, and there it was. It was just perfect. What we've come to expect from the great man. So what a series. We've had some excellent bits of demerits being chucked in. I really hope the next Ashes series that they are as confetti-esque with it as well.
And then we
really end up with 7-7 or something. Let's see lots of Aussies suspended as well.
Basically, doesn't everyone just want to see Broad and Warner going at each other again?
Yeah.
Both on their third demerit point in their 24-month period.
Ideally,
they're both antagonizing each other to see who gets.
We can have that at the Gabatoir for the first test, and then they both get suspended for the second test in Adelaide, and then they come back at the Wacker, and then probably, it's not the Wacker anymore, is it? But then they come back to Perth.
We can call it the Wacker.
We'll call it the Wacker, and then they get more demerit points. So yeah, let's just make that happen. That's exactly
more demerit points, more of the time.
Exactly. That's what we want to see. So England won 3-1. I mean, we could sit here and say, "Oh, wasn't Ollie Pope great? Or wasn't Don Sibley great? And haven't England finally sorted
out?"
But
we know
their top three. We know that everybody else has.
Well, they haven't sorted out the top three because they're about to pick Johnny Best out of three for Sri Lanka.
Exactly. But we don't repeat what everyone else does. So we won't go into all of that. But let's pick up on a few of what were your kind of top moments of the series. Let's take it away from a purely cricketing perspective. What moments were you think, do you know what, I'm going to remember that. I'm going to remember that for as long as I live.
So several things.
Several.
Number one, I'm looking at Joss Butler's chat with Vern, which we've already spoken about.
Nobbed slash Gutgate.
One, because we've always long had this suspicion that contrary to his southwestern lilts that he's got, and he's quite kind of chilled out approach to life, that Joss Butler, oh, nearly went a bit Michael Vaughan then.
Yeah.
Joss Butler is sledger and just aggravator in chief for the England team.
Yeah.
It's when we learnt that actually he's just got a bit of a side to him, and just this brilliant use of schoolboy language, calling him knobhead, calling him fat, so close to the stumps and so loud and so obviously.
Yeah.
And then Ben Stokes just chuntering away in the background.
Yeah.
More of it was pure
schoolboy, wasn't it? Calling him a knobhead, going down the route of talking about his effing guts. And then you've got Ben Stokes in the background backing you up.
Yeah, because, brilliant.
You know, with this footage of what Ben Stokes can do, so just don't bother trying to fight back, Vern. That was a top moment. And as we alluded to earlier, the microphones being turned up was a great thing throughout. Yeah. Any other big moments?
Mark Wood, this is a cricketing perspective, but only because My favourite thing about watching cricket, and it's the reason I love players like Johnny Bairstow and Stuart Broad, who are all a little bit weird, but they love playing for England.
Yeah.
Like, they love it. So, like, the thing I want to do most in the world is play a test match for England, and I love it when people love it as much as I do.
Yeah.
Mark Wood is top of that bracket.
Like, yeah. He's just so happy, isn't he?
He's just so happy. He's so true. Like, and maybe it's because he's been injured so much, and maybe it's because he's questioned whether he's good enough. For a long time, it's looked like he was going to be injured / not quite good enough. And then it started back in the West Indies, and then it started again with his batting in the previous test. I just love seeing people like that do well. People who grafted so much, and he was bowling heat, which everyone wants to see. And he was bowling sides out, and he was smashing it out the ground when he batted.
He even helped Stuart Broad to bat as well, didn't he?
He even miraculously helped Stuart Broad learn which end of the bat he was supposed to be holding. And it's brilliant for England cricket. It's brilliant that we've now got a stable of fast bowlers that.
Yep.
Or we think, hopefully, if he can stay fit, we've got a stable of fast bowlers, and it takes a bit of the pressure off Jofra, and I've got someone who can come in and bowl teams out of pace. But more than anything else, it's just great news for a proper grafter, isn't it? Like, he's come back from that. He must have been some pretty dark places.
It's just great
to see.
It's a happy story for humanity, isn't it?
Yeah.
We should all be happy. We should all be happy. And I think we kind of had a brief conversation on this. And I am going to use the phrase off air. Although it wasn't something we did just before this. This was last week at some point. Yeah. And saying that Mark Wood, he's got such a feel good about him. And
everyone
loves him. And I think it's slightly gone a bit too far. And I'm like, oh, he's so funny. And I'm like, I don't think he's actually that
funny. I don't think he is actually funny.
He's really nice. And
he's just
really
a lovely bloke, yeah.
Yeah. But I think he's a great one-liner, but he's just happy, and as a result, just one of those people that you can't help but just smile when you're around or you see on the telly. So yeah, no, he was absolutely brilliant.
He's got looks like he's got a really shit northern dad sense of humour. Like, do you see the thing with him doing the with a hazy testing the mic?
Yep, yep.
Like it's just awful. It's not funny. It's awful. Yep. It's the sort of thing your dad would do.
Yeah,
and then you see him sort of like dancing or mucking about at training. It's all the sort of naff jokes that a dad would do, like hiding behind something or pretending to a sock puppet or something like that. It's not funny. It's just endearing.
Yeah, it's just an example of some of the fun that England players have on tour, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he keeps getting the job done, which we love. So he keeps the energy up. And we love it. And I think one other bit which I want to add in for just kind of a non-cricketing moment of the series was must have been the end of England's first innings or only innings in the third test when England declared. Then we saw it was a no ball, and then we didn't declare.
The undeclaration.
As it
I'll level with you, you have stolen my third and final.
Oh, I've got it.
Question is: undeclaring a thing now?
It has to be, hasn't
it? And when do you, and at what point is it too late to undeclare?
Well, where have the England players got to? I think the England players had gone beyond the boundary, hadn't they?
Well, I don't know, because if they had,
are you saying is that the point?
Is that the point? Because I reckon if they had, because if you go over the boundary, that's when you're out, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's the but the umpires checking, aren't they? So
but if surely that's literally the line, isn't it?
Yeah,
once you're off the field of play, then you have officially declared.
Yeah, it does come down to that line, and this is where we're going to have to get an Australian or someone from Cricket Australia, because
we've
often said they know where the line is, and they know when you push the line. They know when people have gone too far when it comes to cricket. So I think let's just park that one, and we'll get a representative from Cricket Australia on to really get to the bottom of it.
I think what was especially brilliant about it was the like real like panic, flappy, unprofessional way he changed his mind.
You could just
sort of see him waving his hands like no, I didn't mean it. And he's like waving his hands across himself. Like,
He was clearly thinking of, you know, look, cricket's got a sign for everything. You've got your four, you've got your wide, you've got your noble,
you've got your wicket.
You've got your wicket, you've got everything. Yeah, what is the sign for a non-declaration? You know, you've got the declaration of just waving in from the balcony. I mean, you just wave them back out, but that doesn't really work in reverse, does it? So that was maybe that's something you need to work on to get to the bottom of it.
I hope he makes a habit of it.
Yeah, it just becomes Joe Root's thing.
Yeah,
you never know if
he's truly declared or not.
if they've actually declared, but indeed they did, and did the declaration eventually come? It did, didn't it? Because Broad didn't,
yeah, it became
even
about 20 minutes later. Yeah.
Broad didn't get to bat in that one, whereas in the final one he went whack-a-ta and showed us what we all know he can do every now and then, and have a good swing of
does
the bat.
What he loves. Does what should he loves
we,
the best.
Should we talk briefly about Philander's farewell? I know we talked about him getting hauled up in front of the match referee.
Let's do it
for it. And as I said, there was a really good article a couple of days ago on Crick Info from Andrew Miller, and he lists four or five other players who had, you know, the farewell was ready, and things just didn't go to plan. And I think it's important to note at this stage that, you know, we're talking about very good players to be given the opportunity to have a test farewell. We're not talking about Aftab Habib getting out in his final test matches at Lord's against New Zealand. These are players who've had, you know, very, very good careers. We actually have got Stuart McGill on this.
Someone who we know going into it
is that
it's going to be their final test, not someone for a good reason.
Like, exactly. And I think the
I think we got the sense with Nick Compton that it was about to be his final test.
It was probably going to be. But I think I really like just this opening paragraph where he talks about, or his intro, where he says, as South Africa slipped toward defeat in Johannesburg, Vernon Philander's 64 test career came to an underwhelming end. A hamstring strain suffered while bowling in the second innings, scores of 4 and 10 with the bat, plus a fine from the match referee. Here we look back at a few other farewells that didn't go to plan. Just hits the nail on the head for exactly where it was. And he talks about Graham Gooch.
What happened in Gooch's final test?
So final test was at the Wacker, and he'd said, yeah, look, I'm going to be done. And his final innings was particularly painful, a 12-ball turkey shoot in which he might have been out three times before finally drilling a return catch into Craig McDermott's shoulder and then the bowler's hands as he's tumbled in pain to the turf. And that was Graham Gooch gone at the age of 42. And it does get some excellent stats on his career up to the age of 36 and his career beyond 36.
Was his career beyond the age of 36 insanely good?
So, after the age of 36, from 1990 onwards, he averaged 51.55 in 45 tests, compared to 36.9 in his first 73.
That's Jimmy Anderson-esque.
It's ridiculous, and I think
with the ball equivalent, obviously.
I think it's important that the selectors and Joe Denley are made aware of those stats and give him a chance to go again potentially at some point. Have you seen this list?
I think it's quite kind of poignant that Stuart McGill ends up on this list.
Yeah,
someone who was perpetually about to play the last test of his career, never properly got a proper go at test cricket despite playing bundles of tests and taking a fair few test wickets.
Yeah,
it's just kind of fitting for his career that he went out with a whimper, isn't it?
It is just
generally a bit of a human whimper.
there goes Stuart McGill.
I must remember to thank him.
Absolutely, at the end of it all, and interesting, the final one on the list is Alan Donald, also at Johannesburg, and I think his hamstring goes as well, and he ends up walking off the pitch in tears, and they're playing Australia, and Australia going post 652 for 7. Just piss off. He's not helping anything. You're just, you know, just no. So AD had a similar end to his stellar test career as well.
Who's your favorite ideal last test? So like, who went out with your favorite bang?
So one that actually happened. So I mean, the obvious answer to that is Alistair Cook, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think I'm going to run with, because you put me on the spot here, I'm going to go with Nasser Hussain.
Yeah, lovely.
Just for his pure grittiness of not only going out with a ton, but also running out
Strauss.
Andrew Strauss. And I think Strauss was going for his second ton on debut, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And he was
looking really good for it as well, wasn't he?
There was absolutely no question. I mean, the fact that Nasser then goes on to make a ton as well kind of shows that it was
delicious.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, that to me was pure Nass. You know, he was gritty and he was very much a team man and he knew he'd let the team down and he just knew that he had to carry them over the line and get that ton. So yeah, that definitely for me. What about you?
So let me take you back to, this has long been a favourite topic of conversation for me. Let me take you back to Chattergram.
April
2006.
Okay.
Why this test sticks in the mind?
Are we talking about a double ton?
Talking about a double ton.
We are.
Your good friend, Jason Gillespie, in his final test.
Yeah.
Running around on his back like it's a rocking horse.
Of course he was.
Celebrating. What a way to go out. Like the most unbelievable test innings of all time.
Absolutely.
And then just went, I'm done.
I'm done. That's me done, guys. He was, I think we referenced him in the pinch hitter a couple of days ago when we were doing the
201st.
Yeah, highest test score with the number of issues we've done. And I kind of highlighted that he'd actually only got over 50 maybe twice before.
Yeah.
So it really does highlight, excuse me, it really does highlight what a mad score that was.
It's insane that he got double 100 batting at three. And no one else, like Michael Hussey got 180 in that innings, but no one else got any runs of any note.
Yeah.
And then Jason Gillespie scored a double 100. Because if that was sprinting, he would be getting done for doping all over the place.
Clearly. And then now, whenever anyone else gets a double ton for the first time,
he says, welcome to the club.
Exactly. And let's say it as well. Dizzy is one of those...
one of the good guys.
He is one of the good guys. He's very good on the radio and he's just clearly a very nice guy.
Yeah. A lot of time for him. A lot of time for his Ashes 05 hairband and long hair look as well.
Yeah, and the fact that he wasn't anywhere near as good as he used to be and we just smashed him around the park as a result.
Yeah, exactly.
So we were talking about South Africa series and we've ended up in Chattergram talking about
and that's Dizzy's, the beauty of podcasts.
Dizzy's hairband. So happy days indeed. Any more for any more on South Africa or should we leave it be there?
Just the one thing I did really enjoy was Dom Sibley being spectacularly bad at high fives.
Yes. Yeah.
Spectacularly and consistently dreadful at giving high fives.
Yeah, he made Emily Thornberry's effort with Jeremy Corbyn on the 2017 general election. Actually, vice versa. That was more Corbyn on Thornberry, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a bit.
He was that. Yeah, so maybe we need Corbyn and Sibley to get together and
just try and high five each other.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe we should look to organise that. If we don't, Sky will. So.
Yeah, well, Corbyn's at a loose end.
He's a very loose
get end. On telly and high five an opener.
It works. Let's run with it.
What's next? What do you want to chat about?
Yeah, so we're done. We're done with South Africa, and next England are going to Sri Lanka. So I actually went and spoke to Experience Travel Group. Hello everybody, I am now here in the company of the Experience Travel Group. I am with Nick Clark and Sam Clark and we're going to talk a little bit about the upcoming test series in Sri Lanka and maybe why you should be going there with them. So first things first guys, thanks very much for making the time to have a chat with us at the Pinch Hitter podcast. Nick, when you hear the word pinch hitter, the phrase, who springs to mind? What comes to mind for you?
Well, fortunately, as we're discussing Sri Lanka, the first name that springs to mind is Sanath Jayasuriya and the 96 World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And his reinvention of opening batsman in one day cricket.
Perfect. That's exactly the kind of person we love to hear about. We had Ian Austin, who was referenced last week.
Adam Gilchrist quite often gets a name check, but we're always happy to see it moved away.
Do people ever name check the endless string of England wicket keepers who were trialled out and never succeeded?
Hopefully they will. I mean, that's what we often say, that there's a long list of them, and so far no one's been repeated. Opened up. And even last week in the India Australia ODI game, Mitchell Stark was promoted up the order to number 5, and they were all saying he's now a pinch hitter. So that was just great branding for us. So happy days indeed. But let's forget about cricket for 2 seconds. First up, tell us about the Experience Travel Group. Nick or Sam, over to you.
Well, Experience Travel Group, we're a bespoke holiday operator. We do experience-based holidays in Southeast Asia, in Sri Lanka, India, the subcontinent. It's all, for us, it's about experiencing the country, it's about tasting it, it's about great hotels as well, but it's also about, you know, meeting people, having experiences, finding out what the country is really all about. And that's what we do. So we've also done, going back to cricket, we have done 3 cricket tours. Mm-hmm. For us, it's about getting that mix of seeing the cricket, but also for people who want to discover what the country is about and see a bit of what makes that place amazing, really. So. There we are.
Perfect. And how many times have you been to Sri Lanka?
I've been to Sri Lanka more times than I could probably count. I've definitely been, I don't know, upwards on 20.
Excellent.
So that makes me sound like I can't count to 20. I've been definitely a lot of times and I've never kept a record. So yeah.
Nick, and you?
Not as many times, although again, I did try and count the other day and I think I got up to 9 or 10. But that sort of amount. But yeah, again, not lost count a while ago.
Yeah, and first memory of cricket in Sri Lanka?
First memory of cricket in Sri Lanka was, well, beyond seeing people play cricket on the side of the road, mm-hmm. Was 2007, mm-hmm. when England were touring, watching the Test match in Gaul. Yep. No, sorry, Colombo. Mm-hmm. And it was Stuart Broad's debut, actually.
Okay.
So yeah, that was the first Test match I went to. Also went to Gaul that year as well.
Brilliant. Cool. And yourself, Sam?
Yeah, funny enough, I saw England versus India versus Sri Lanka in Gaul in 2001, mm-hmm. and Murulithian, I think, got 59.
Excellent. So, it was a test match.
Yeah, it was a test match. And I say I think, because if I'm honest, I was very, very, very drunk.
Okay.
I was drinking with some locals.
Yeah.
Kind of, I think they're paid cheerleaders that kind of get paid to go in and toot the trumpet and
Excellent.
Things like that.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, early 20s or something, so yeah.
Didn't know better.
I didn't know any better. But anyway, I do remember him whacking it around, so yeah, I think that happened. I should look
Excellent.
It up.
And can you remember what happened in the rest of the game?
Nope,
not at all.
Not at all,
beers. What was the beers you were drinking?
It wasn't beer. I would have been all right if it was beer. It was arak, which is the sort of Sri Lankan spirit, which
Excellent.
Is made from distilled coconut toddy.
Brilliant.
Which is, yeah, it can be quite strong.
Excellent memory there. So, well, let's look at the series in Sri Lanka. The Test series begins in Gaul on the 19th of March, and then they head to Colombo for the 27th of March. And I've been the kind of person who has got up at 4 a.m. to go and watch a England Test series in Sri Lanka from back home. And I'll be honest with everyone listening back home that it's not always the most entertaining cricket to watch on the telly. You're generally talking gritty innings, maybe a 60 runs made off 240 balls or something like that. So it's not necessarily the most entertaining wham bam cricket that you get to watch. And in the cold of the UK, day one in Gaul, I've checked it earlier, it's going to be a 6:05 a.m. sunrise. So if that alarm goes off at 4:20 on the 19th of March, you're going to struggle. I think you may be hitting snooze. The other option, of course, guys, is you go there. You go there and experience it, and you're there in Gaul for day one. So can you guys tell us a bit about the, I guess, the cricketing watching experience of Gaul? I want to hear loads about other things you can do in Sri Lanka as well. But first off, 19th of March, first day in Gaul. What can you expect if you've never been there before?
Well, I mean, you can be biased, but you can expect, first of all, you can expect one of the most picturesque grounds in the world.
Yep.
You've got the Dutch fort that, that sort of is behind the ground, and on two sides you've got the Indian Ocean. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that in itself is a
pretty impressive.
Better than, yep. Than a dark Thursday morning in the UK.
Yep.
You have, it's a lovely kind of traditional ground. It's very kind of, it's kind of very open. You've got lots of kind of noise. You've got just, well, in the ground, you've got, you know, the Barmy army doing their thing. Mm-hmm. You've got the local Sri Lankans sort of banging drums. You often have lots of kind of kids in pristine white tops singing and making lots of noise. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you've got the obligatory buses hurtling around the sort of, it's the ground is basically a roundabout, and mm-hmm. so you have loads of buses that kind of go around the side, because it's just by a bus station, honking their horns mm-hmm. at ridiculous levels. So you just kind of get that kind of atmosphere and colour,
yeah.
Sort of straight away, really.
Brilliant. And once you're in the ground, is it expensive? What's the general, if you want to get a drink or whatever you want to do?
It's
chaotic. Yeah, yeah. The stands are all temporary.
Yeah.
So they definitely sort of look and have a feel of a temporary sort of look. They're draped in cloth.
Yeah.
And then there's never enough bars.
Yeah.
The food is awful. Sort of really rank looking hot dogs.
Excellent.
But it's all very cheap. So the beers are sort of a dollar a go. Mm-hmm. If you do travel with us, we have a nice way of getting through the chaos, in that mm-hmm. we have a guy called Henry, who basically works as our kind of rep, and his job is to spend the day going to and from the bar, mm-hmm. stocking up with beers and bringing them to your seat.
Excellent.
So that's quite a nice way of enjoying it all, really.
Henry the hero amidst the chaos.
Indeed.
Does Henry do anything else on the as part of the whole trip, or is that his one? You jet him in just for that one day.
That's well. He's there for the full. He's there for all 5 days.
Okay, so he's not just a day one.
No, he's not just a day one. He's there for
a man and many times.
Yeah. he went last time. He used to work for us. And was heavily involved in the 2018 tour, but then mm-hmm. sadly he went and started selling shorts, as you do. So he was such a success and was loved so much by the clients last time that we thought it was rude not to offer him a 2-week temporary contract to fly back over there and provide people with beers.
Fantastic. So he's like a freelance franchise cricketer, except he purely goes and gets you beers.
Basically, and wears a sort of rather elaborate kind of Peru hat,
we've also got we're about making it very easy, so mm-hmm. he smooths out any difficulties, anything going on, anything you need to know when your taxi's coming to pick you up in the morning, or you know. What restaurant to go and eat at, or any, it's something with your hotel, he's there to sort it out. So one of the things we're offering is, you know, we can make that really easy and smooth and the whole thing straightforward.
Fantastic. So Harry, a real hero.
Henry the hero.
Henry.
And it's just quite funny because he looks very English and he wears a bowler hat and a straw boater.
Yeah.
But some of the cricket itself wasn't bad as well.
Cricket was great last time, actually.
Well, we won.
We won for a start. We won all three tests. But the Gould test match was over in 4 days. But the first day, we were struck. I think we went for lunch and we were, what, 5 down?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So 100, no, probably wasn't 100 for 5. And then Ben Foulkes making his debut.
Yep.
And was it Sam Curran?
Sam Curran, yeah.
Usually Sam Curran.
Yeah. Who dug in the second session, and then we ended up. I can't remember where we ended up. High 200s or something.
Yep.
Which on a low slow pitch like Gaul is not bad, and then ground them out with the three spinners.
Yeah.
Over the next couple of days, it was good. good. I mean, it was attritional cricket, but it was very enjoyable.
Yeah, it was enjoyable. And we might good to see a proper wicket keeper. Yeah, we might see him again, I think, this tour.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's good.
Two Ben Folks fans here, by the sounds of things, here at the Experience Travel Group. So that's kind of, I guess, the experience you've got if you're on the tour with you guys. What are the Sri Lankan fans like at a test match? Is it the kind of thing which they'll come to all 5 days if it goes that far, or people generally come for 1 day? What's the usual approach?
Bit of a mix, really. You've got the character who last time was balancing the bottle on his head for 5 days.
Yeah.
In front of us, he was wearing a Sri Lankan shirt.
He was wearing a Sri Lankan shirt. Yes, he was.
Yeah. And he was, so we were all sat in our stand, and he was just in front of us. He got on TV a few times.
Yeah.
He had a plastic water bottle on his head.
There's always one.
And he was balancing that for 5 days, and we had. We had the school kids, there was a group of school kids kind of in the stand next to us who, they looked like they were there for most of the days. But I think it's
they might not be the same school kids.
They might not be the same school kids, that's true.
Yeah,
that is true.
No, not really.
No.
You've got school to go to.
But you get, I think you get, you know, as often is the case with Test cricket, obviously there are more England fans there than Sri Lankans, and you've got the old kind of aficionados who kind of know everything that there is to know about cricket, and sit there kind of sagely, but you get a lot of people that kind of pop in, so they have a system where they kind of charge the tourists one amount, the locals sort of find their way in. So at the end of the day, there's typically more of them sort of in the locals enclosure than there was at the beginning of the day. But yeah, it's all a bit of a mix. But they're very enthusiastic. They love the English.
Yeah.
They have a long history of enthusiastically being supportive of the Barmy Army and the numbers, I mean, apart from anything, the numbers of cricket fans that came out during the period where Sri Lanka was kind of, you know, they really weren't getting many tourists 20 years ago, and they were very enthusiastic about the exuberance and excitement that the Barmy Army brought in those days.
Yeah, and what's great is that you're talking cricket with everyone that you meet, you know, everyone at your hotel, or, you know, your tuk-tuk driver, or, you know, whatever it is, you're talking cricket, you know, they're always everyone's interested, and everyone knows about it, you know, on a level that doesn't happen here, you know, unless you spot a fellow fan. But yeah, they're everyone, you know, really, absolutely everyone.
Passionate cricketing nation.
Yeah, really, you have to be slightly prepared, unless you really know what you're talking about, to be outdone on the county batting average of Ben Folks or someone else, as you pretend you know what you're talking about, and a local Sri Lankan sort of shows you that you don't maybe quite know where you're.
Sounds like maybe talking from experience and got.
A couple of times I've been caught chatting out my arse.
and also, Gaul, I'm not promoting people not going to watch the game in the stadium, but you got quite a good view from outside the ground as well, am I right in saying?
Yes, yeah, so on the fort. So you get a lot of people, a lot of the Barmy Army would be up there. It's a good view, but you are quite noticeably not in the ground.
Yeah. Can you see the whole pitch?
You can see the whole pitch, yeah. I mean, maybe a little bit here and there, you can't, but you can certainly see the pitch. And I mean, what I did last time, I think Sam was the same, is that I went for the first 2 days, and then on the third day, I had my wife with me, and I didn't want to subject her to too much cricket, so I promised her a day of kind of, you know, sitting by the pool and relaxing, and we went into the Gaul Fort, had lunch, which is a really nice place to kind of wander.
Yep.
And accidentally showed her
the ruins of the ramparts, and ended up there and sort of sat down for a couple of hours and watched the end of the day's play, and that's really nice. So it's better being in the ground if you can, but as an experience at times, it's really a nice thing to do.
Yeah, and it's not every cricket ground where you can go and watch it from an old fort, is it?
No, so, exactly. Yeah,
there were some English cricket fans that seem to think it's a great idea to sit in the sun all day, every yep. day, drinking beer.
Yeah.
Having done that back in 2001, I can tell you, so it's not a great idea.
Yeah.
You really need to have a ticket for the shade at least part of the time. I don't think AC is necessary, that we can arrange that, but mm-hmm. just the in the shade, out of the sun, it is pretty vital, to be honest.
Yeah.
So if you want to enjoy the cricket.
Okay, cool. Now, let's move away from the cricket again and just talk a bit more generally about Sri Lanka as a destination. It was top of my list for where I wanted to go on my honeymoon back in October of last year, but I was overruled. So what are the best things to do in Sri Lanka?
I mean, I think one of the really great things about Sri Lanka is that there is probably no best thing to do.
Yeah.
It's the variety of it. So it's not like, you know, there's lots of places where you go for X reason, whereas Sri Lanka, it kind of depends on what you want to do. So you've got some really amazing wildlife opportunities, you've got some incredible ancient history, you've got the kind of colonial aspect, you've got the tea plantations, you've got beautiful beaches. You know, there's that whole kind of variety. So, you know, you've got something that can keep everyone happy, mm-hmm. But you can also have a really interesting holiday where you see lots of different things that are kind of really quite unique.
Yep.
And then you also, I mean, one of the things that often sticks with people and that we get, you know, we get a lot of comments, a lot of feedback about are the people themselves.
And, yeah.
You know, we talked about them with the cricket, but it's the same principle just generally. They're so welcoming, they're so enthusiastic, they're so friendly, and that kind of bond and excitement is what people kind of remember. So mm-hmm. it's one of those places that really, you know, takes a bit from people. They really kind of you know, they fall in love with its quirks and warts mm-hmm. and all, but you know, it's a magical place in that sense.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant. I mean, I've been to been on some cricket tours where I've ended up by day four or day five and just thought, you know what, I'm not going to go to the cricket today, and I've gone and spent a day at the beach or done something else. So obviously England are in goal for the first test and then go to Colombo. Are there any other kind of, I know you said there's too many highlights, but are there any other kind of must-see destinations around either of those, or just more generally in Sri Lanka?
I think if you're doing, it depends what you're doing. So there's different ways to do the cricket, and this is where, you know, we come in to kind of help people do that kind of planning. But I think if you're wanting to do both of the test matches, you've got three nights in between. What tends to work well in between that is a safari. Mm-hmm. So either Yala or Udawalla National Park.
Yeah.
Amazing for elephant sightings. One of the best places in the world also to see leopards. Mm-hmm. And that works very nicely within that itinerary, and potentially even going up into the tea plantations up in the hill. So that's the kind of obvious one. Mm-hmm. Whereas other people, we're finding other people are doing is kind of like a 10-day to 2-week kind of tour,
yeah,
where they take in that range of sites and they kind of go around. They do, you know, Siguiria is probably the most famous of the sites, mm-hmm. and is, you know, as with a lot of places around the world, you know, locals claim it to be the eighth wonder of the world.
Yeah.
Amazing place, and you can kind of then combine that through Kandy, mm-hmm. get the train up into the tea plantations,
yeah.
again do the wildlife, and then finish with Gaul as you know, a combination of your kind of beach and kind of cricket. So that's the kind of two ways of doing it, really.
Perfect. Yeah,
and what we'd say is give it as much time as you've got. You know, mm-hmm. if you can give it 2 weeks, then fantastic, and take it slow, because it's so beautiful. It is ridiculously beautiful and so different from place to place. So varied. Like I go, it surprises me, and I've been there, and as I say, upwards on 20 times, but it, every time I go there, it surprises me.
Yeah.
I find another place that's just magical. And so, you know, we can do whatever you want to do, just 3 days at the cricket mm-hmm. at Gaul, maybe one day at Colombo, then we can work a holiday around that.
Brilliant.
If you want to make do do every day at the cricket and on the ground, it can be done, you know. It's whatever suits you.
Fantastic. Well, look, yeah, Nick and Sam are telling us all about it here. The first test in goal will be England looking to get their fourth straight away test match victory, something they haven't done since the 1950s. So, guys, thanks very much for giving us a bit of time. And finally, either one of you can do this. What number should people call? Where should they go if they want to find out more?
So, experiencetravelgroup.com. You can contact our contact details are on the website. Mm-hmm. You can contact myself or Nick directly.
Perfect.
If you mention the podcast, I think we can throw in an extra meal, something along those lines, to say thank you. And just contact us or call direct on 0207 924 7133.
Perfect. Thanks very much, guys. Cheers.
Thank you.
Bye.
So that was a lovely little bit of chat with the guys at the Experience Travel Group. And as I mentioned while I was there, I've never been to Sri Lanka. But Terence, you have, and you've been and watched some Test cricket, haven't you?
Yeah, we went out there. A bunch of us went out there in 2012 to a... Was it a 2 or 3 match series? It might be a 3 match series, and I only went to 2. We went out to Galle and Colombo.
Nice.
The guys were saying that... was it Galle? They were saying it's just the most stunning ground, and it's absolutely right. We watched the whole of the first few days up on the fort, so you're up probably 100 feet above the ground, and sat on the ramparts of this fort, and you've got the Indian Ocean. Is it the Indian Ocean? Away to your left, and you've got this beautiful old cricket ground on the middle of a roundabout, and you've got this brilliant textbook subcontinental city scene in front of you, with buses and cars, and it's mayhem, and there's a big market there with livestock and cattle all over the place, like exactly as you'd expect it. And you've got this beautiful beach scene of, like, just there's a backdrop to the ground with this like picturesque Indian Ocean. The ground itself is really old school, like, because it's not got permanent stands, it's all got temporary seating and grass mounds and stuff. And we were watching up on the ramparts in this fort, and everyone had constructed their own little little gazebos, I guess, with tarpaulin and sticks to take off to sit under, because it is
quite a bit of shade,
boiling hot. It's like energy sapping heat, but up on high you get the wind off the sea. And it's just incredible. And the Sri Lankans love their cricket, and there's games of cricket going on up on the fort. And the cricket itself is great to watch because it's always super competitive. The second game I watched was out in Colombo when Kevin Peterson made 158, and he was scooping Dilshan all over the place, and he was refusing to play Dilshan's shots, bringing out the reverse to switch hits. In a test match for the first time. It was one of the most brilliant sporting performances I've had the pleasure of watching live. But more generally than that, Sri Lanka is the most beautiful country. We took some time out in between tests to go up into the tea plantations up in the mountains, spend a bit of time hanging out there. We went on safari, went down to the beaches in Unawatana near Galle, where you've got this like picturesque kind of surfing country. With beautiful, beautiful waves and loads of fresh fish markets and stuff like that. But yeah, we went out into Ella up in the tea plantations for some walking, which is stunning scenery. There's loads of up there. There's this there's this pilgrimage you can do overnight to watch the sunrise up something called Adam's Peak, which remains one of the best experiences I've had in anywhere I've traveled. Actually, it was amazing. It's like this religious pilgrimage that people make at sunrise every morning. Incredible. Just a brilliant country. People are lovely. They love their cricket. Can't help you enough. And it's like, there's some tours you go on that are a little bit staid, a little bit done, a little bit like kind of, you don't really get the chance to feel what the country's like. Sri Lanka couldn't be more different. There's so much you can do. There's so much you can get out and see. Like, just an amazing place.
Brilliant. Sounds absolutely amazing. So definitely have to make sure we go out for another series or Maybe for a different international series at some point. Love the sound of Sri Lanka. So, moving on. Last week, obviously, we introduced the new feature for the first time, which I called the Over That Was for my week, and we looked at back in 2001, and we were at Lords, and we learned all about Scotty Boswell,
the Battle of Boswell.
Battle of Boswell, as it was, and Battles of Boswell, and very much enjoyed it. But today, I hand over the new ball, let's say, new ball responsibilities go to Terence, and you know, Terence, take the floor.
So my feature, and I don't want to brag, but I have absolutely nailed the name of this one. What are we doing? We're going over and over again.
Brilliant.
We've been over the over, and now we're going over it again.
Over again. Let's do it.
Over and over again.
Beautiful.
Do you want me to say it again? No, probably enough.
No, let's do it.
So I want to take you back to, I want to cast your mind back to February the 6th, 2009. Ooh. Tell me where you were on February the 6th, 2009.
February the 6th, 2009. I have a feeling that it may well have been a week before we ever met.
Close. It was a week after we ever met.
Okay.
So February. Let me take you back to the evening of February the 6th, 2009.
Okay. So I'm thinking we are in Antigua.
We're in Kingston, Jamaica.
Okay. You go.
Yep. We were out in a rum bar. Mm-hmm. I was there, Sim and Ben was there. Mm-hmm. And so, crucially, for the rest of this story, was your good friend, Jerome Taylor,
okay.
Right, so the over that I want to go over again actually happened the day after that, on February the 7th, 2009.
Okay. Week before Valentine's Day.
Week before Valentine's Day, and as a romantic, this is important. Mm-hmm. It's an over that never really gets thought of in the context of one over. More of a spell.
Okay.
But it's always, there's one over within it. It's always stuck with me as being very representative of the unadulterated chaos that was going on around it.
Beautiful.
So February 6th was day three, mm-hmm, of a test match in Kingston, Jamaica. The first test match of a four test series that became a five test series, I think, in England against the West Indies. Mm-hmm. February 6th, day three, closed with the West Indies' first innings on 352 for 7 in reply to England's 318.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Gayle made 100, Ronnie Sarwan had made 100, Stuart Broad had taken 4 wickets. So day four kicks off. I'm nursing a hangover. Nope. Been on the rums the night before.
Of course, yeah.
Bob Marley's birthday is February, mm-hmm, the 6th, so national holiday. Everyone was out in the town. Jerome Taylor had been out on the rum shack with several other members of the West Indies team.
Excellent.
And the wider supporting fraternity. So day four kicks off. I'm nursing a slightly fuzzy head. We get to the ground nice and early. It's my first ever away test match mm-hmm, with England. Nursing a slightly fuzzy head, we get to the ground and just expecting to see England wrap up the last three wickets and then bat big.
Yeah.
And we already knew that they were going to be a few runs behind.
Mm-hmm.
And then see them bat big into the next couple of days.
Yeah.
So day four kicks off. We wrap up those last three wickets. Broad finishes off his fifer.
Mm-hmm.
Brendan Nash, your good friend.
Good friend, Brendan Nash. Yeah.
Rounds off for 50, and it looks, mm-hmm, a lot like the draw's going to be on the card. And then England start their innings, and out of nowhere, Jerome Taylor starts bowling absolute bombs. Are you with me? You remember the day?
I am. Yeah, I remember. I remember it. I wasn't there, but I do remember. I remember the spell. I remember. You know.
Were you not there? Happens.
But no. We didn't arrive until the next test match
in Barbados.
So we were not in Antigua. So we were not there for this. But
so you weren't out with Jerome Taylor the night before.
I wasn't. You were.
I was.
I hadn't met you. I hadn't met you at this point. So so this is well, I kind of know what happens, but I wasn't there to see it.
So anyway, Jerome Taylor starts bowling absolute bombs. He's bowling real proper West Indian heat right on this really full length. The pitch is breaking up and he just keeps banging away at this crack. And the crowd are going mental and it's this brilliant Calypso scene.
Mm-hmm.
Cook goes in the third over. Bell goes for a beautifully made four in the 10th over.
Yep.
And then Jerome Taylor bowled Peterson for one in the 11th mm-hmm. over. And the ground went ballistic. It went insane.
England fans included.
England fans included. Mm-hmm. Strauss went in the 16th over.
Mm-hmm.
17th was uneventful. 18th was uneventful. And then you've got England's man for a crisis. It's 2009. Mm-hmm. Who do you want in a crisis? I'm asking.
So Ian Bell's already gone, isn't he?
Ian Bell's gone.
Crisis with the bat?
Paul Collingwood? Exactly, Paul Collingwood.
Yep.
So 20 for four, Collingwood's at the crease. He's just seen off two rather uneventful overs. And that's when we get to the 19th over, which is my over I want to go over again.
Okay, brilliant. So 19th, the scene set, what's the score?
Scene set, England are 20 for four.
Okay. Excellent.
And this is where it goes from, fuck, this might be really bad, into
God awful.
Jesus, into Jesus, this is really bad. So Collingwood's man for a crisis. He sets himself and he faces the first ball of the over. And Jerome Taylor hits that really full length again. And Collingwood just plays forward and gets a big, thick inside edge.
Excellent.
And he scrambles up and he crosses with Fred and he gets back for two. Calm things down. Surely two runs, calm things down. Collie's here. Don't worry about it.
No worries. Okay.
So that's ball one and he's got two. Except that, unbeknownst to Collie, he's actually been bowled off his inside edge.
He's run two.
And run two without noticing. And then he gets back from his two. And you've got this brilliant scene of Fred telling Collingwood, you got bowled off your inside edge, mate. You got to go.
And were the West Indian players celebrating?
The West Indian players run off, celebrate. Okay. Collingwood's run, turned, watched them celebrating and run back. And the bail's just sitting there on the floor. And you can see him go, you sort of see it across his face where he goes, oh, shit. And he's got to walk off.
Well, I'm pleased. So, I'm not pleased that happened, but I'm pleased that you've clarified that, because I was here looking at the scorecard and I was like, no, mate, he got out for one. So how's he run two? But this is brilliant. I was already deeply invested in this. I'm even more in now.
So the man for a crisis has just escalated the crisis from not just embarrassment, but to actual omni shambles by not realizing that he's out. So
brilliant.
That takes a score to 20 for five. And Matt Prior's at the crease with Fred.
So Matt Prior strode to the wicket, chest out, body chest language.
Out. Yep. Yeah, chest out, body language, big cheese. Mm-hmm. And Jerome Taylor's runs in, bowls the second ball of the over, bangs it onto that length, and Matt Prior looks like a rabbit in the headlights and he plays forward to it. He just about manages to get some bat on it.
Mm-hmm.
And defend it away. And he kind of drops the ball. No one kind of moves. But you can kind of see this look on his face. It's like, I'm out of my depth here. I don't know what's going on. And so the third ball of the over comes in, and Jerome Taylor absolutely nails that line again. He's given Prior no width. He tries to play his back foot drive and just gets stuck in his crease and can't get anywhere and just gets cramped for pace and the ball gets a bit big on him.
Yeah.
And it's the beautiful example of West Indian pace bowling and the crowd going mental.
Yeah.
England are trying to work out what their plan of attack is to this. The fourth ball comes down and at this point you can see in Matt Prior's face that he's got absolutely no fucking idea how he's supposed to do it. He gets dragged forward again and just prods any element of bat he can get on it.
Yeah.
And just kind of like half shovels, spoons it into the covers. And he could not look more like a tail ender. And then fifth ball of the over. It's this like slower ball off cutter, just pings through the gate. Prior again tries to play forward for it. and just gets bowled straight through the gate, completely done by the slower ball. So you've had this brilliant display of like Caribbean Calypso fast bowling, banging this attacking length, and he just throws in an off cutter and bowls Pryor through the gate. And by this point, the crowd are going berserk. We've sort of, my hangover is as bad a hangover as I've ever had.
Weren't they singing London Bridge is Falling Down?
They started singing that when Peterson got out.
Excellent.
Then it got louder and louder as Pryor got out. And that was the point when it became, at that point, 26.
Yeah.
That's when you realise this is now we're on course for humiliation. We're about to lose this by an innings. This is day four. It's gone from being bore draw to humiliation. Ball six, Broad comes to the crease.
Yeah.
Man for a crisis again.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The ball hits that attacking line again. And Broad just kind of plays this beautiful push into the covers. And that's the end of the over that we're going over again. The reason why it sticks in my mind is not just because it was like a seminal moment in my cricket watching career. Not only was it this beautiful and maybe perhaps the last example we saw from the West Indies of like beautiful Caribbean fast bowling, this attacking length that no one had an answer to, and this great England team, batsmen like Peterson and Strauss and Cook and Collingwood and Pryor had no answers to this fast bowling. That over, and the reason I chose that particular over, is where, like I said, where it went from being just a bit embarrassing, just a really good opening spell with a new ball, into absolute chaos.
Yeah.
And if you remember that innings, Ian Bell got dropped after that innings. The rest of that series didn't exactly go to plan.
Yeah.
It was the kind of seminal moment that ticked Andy Flower into his new way of living, new way of working, quest to get England to number one in the world.
Yeah.
And we kind of went away and won the Ashes in that summer off the back of that plan. And then it was all uphill from there. But if you watch the Edge documentary, they talk about how that innings was the kind of seminal moment of, lads, we need to sort our shit out here. And you could see that in their eyes when they were batting. You could see that something's got to change now. We don't know how to play this guy. We haven't prepared for this. We've rested on our laurels a bit much. Like, the way Matt Pryor was looking for most of that over was, I don't know what to do here. I'm out of my depth.
Yeah.
And actually, so that over had played such an important role in England's kind of rise to the top and then subsequent downfall that's charted in the edge. And Matt Pryor was such a big player of that, wasn't he? He was such a big part of that kind of nuggety middle order when sides just kept coming at you. And in this spell that Taylor was bowling, in this over in particular, we didn't have an answer, and we didn't keep coming at them. You know what I mean? We just kept going away again with a whimper.
I love that.
And that for me is just why it was such an important over. It was so brilliant to be there watching it. And it never really gets thought of as an over, does it? It gets thought of as a spell, but there's this brilliant over in the middle of it that started off so hilariously and had all these plot lines running through it. It was just brilliant.
So you've actually pinpointed the over from which England went to number one in the world.
Yeah, I reckon.
I think the Edge really should. They should have maybe on the DVD extras. Yeah. They should have
another Edge.
Yeah, with you talking about this over. That's brilliant. Absolutely love that. And I think another kind of added context to it, and you've provided more context than I ever thought was possible for that. I thought, this over. Yeah, we know where this is going. We know what this innings is about. But this
offhanded context that doesn't actually exist, by assuming that you were there as well.
Yeah, which made it even better. But the rest of that series was dog awful in terms of
it was awful
entertainment.
Cricket.
Now, there were loads of centuries, but it was just every pitch was just a batsman's paradise. So basically England's collapse and that over that you talked about. Not only did it get them on this road to getting world number one, it just also meant that for the rest of the series that West Indies could produce pitches which probably would only get six wickets across 5 days.
Yeah.
And so as a result, they were going to win.
We watched Ronnie Sarwan score 291 in one of the subsequent tests, didn't we?
Yes.
And for he was batting across 3 days, I think. And for at least one of those days we didn't bother turning up.
Yeah,
it was just so dry, wasn't it?
Not for me. I remember Strauss scored 100 before lunch. On one day, and yeah, it was only Straussy. You know, we're not talking Jason Roy, we're not talking KP. Admittedly, we're not talking Denley or Cook, but Strauss wasn't known for getting on with it in quite the same way, was he? So,
yeah.
So yeah, brilliant. Absolutely love that as ever. And just looking through that scorecard, I wasn't there. I would like to know. So we've got 5 ducks for England. Fred, the only one to get into double figures, making 24 off 47. But I think a bit of credit to Ryan Sidebottom, who faced 43 balls. Got 6 runs, but 43 balls. I mean, can you remember a bit about that?
What I can remind you about Ryan Sidebottom's innings is that when he came to the crease, the most optimistic bit of cricket punditry I've ever heard, bearing in mind that we would have been at the time something like 30 for 8.
Yep.
Where would he have batted? Probably would have batted 9, so it would have been about 30 for 7, wouldn't it? When he came to the crease with Fred, and friend of the pod, Charlie Brown, who was sat next to me at the ground, leant over to me and went, "This is good, actually, because now we've got a left and right hand combination, we can put a bit of pressure on at 30 for 7.
And maybe it did. Maybe it did. Maybe it did. 3 balls to get him out.
Yeah, but I do remember watching it thinking, Fred's still there, so we'll be all right. And then I think he got out for about 25.
24 or 47.
Yeah. I remember thinking the whole time he was in, we have a chance. yeah, we might still not lose by an innings.
Brilliant. Fantastic. And what did we call that feature this week?
We called it over and over again.
Over and over again. Brilliant.
Over and over.
Let's just say it again so I don't get it wrong. You just say it again.
Over and over again.
Over and over again. Perfect. Well, I don't know why I'm saying thank you, but it was great. And I know for a fact that every single one of our listeners will have enjoyed that as well. We're nearly at the end of this Pinch Hitter podcast. What we'll do, a quick nod before we go to event in Harare, where Zimbabwe and Sri Lanka are playing in their second of two test matches. And Zimbabwe are looking like they might pull off a win, which would be a bit of a turn up for the books after they lost the first test by 10 wickets. But going into day 4, Zimbabwe lead Sri Lanka by 175 runs with 9 wickets remaining. Zimbabwe made 406 in their first innings. Sri Lanka were then all out for 293, and Zimbabwe are 62 for 1. So going into day 4, and just to give you a bit of an overview in terms of Zimbabwe's recent form, and they've not played a huge amount of test cricket, but They've only won twice. Well, they won in 2018 against Bangladesh, one test. Before that, they hadn't won since 2013 against Pakistan. So if they could bring this home over the next couple of days, then that will be a huge cause for celebrations in Harare.
Oh, how good seeing Zimbabwe win a test match. I think everyone wants to see that, don't they? Fantastic 100.
By the skipper.
In the middle order from the skipper, Sean Williams. Love to see that. Been around for ages, hasn't he? And he's had one of those careers that's just kind of been perpetuated by this stop-start test career Zimbabwe, or test history that Zimbabwe have had. But we'd love to see them kicking off a new decade with a test win, wouldn't we?
Absolutely, yeah. There's his second test century that he's made. And a fact that you may not know if you've not been studying this test match with watching pretty much every ball, is the fact that Zimbabwean opener Kevin Kasuza, who had to drop out of the, or get to be concussion substituted out of the first test, he got concussion substituted out of this test as well. he was fielding at short leg, and it actually contributed to the wicket of, I'll find it here, I think it was... who was it? Maybe it was Mendes. Yeah, it was off Raza's bowling. It was caught Mumba bowled Raza. Basically, Mendes hit it into Kevin's head, and it then and spooned up. And as a result, had to have another concussion substitute.
Now, that was the second one, was it?
Yes.
And it was two separate incidents. He was having concussion symptoms from the first time again.
No. So this is the second time he's been hit on the head. And so he's been replaced this time by, I'm never going to pronounce that right, but his surname is Maruma. There's a bit of, the concussion substitute thing. It's been made famous by Labuschagne.
Is that the second and third instance of a concussion sub?
No, I think it's happened somewhere else as well. But he's definitely the only person to have done it in two successive test matches. All credit to him for doing it.
Yeah, big fan of that. Incredible. Hope he comes back for the third test and
deeply.
Yeah, and survives.
And survives. Absolutely. We'll check in on him very, very soon. So that's what's going on in Harare. We will we'll be back very soon, I'm sure, for another pinch hitter podcast. The test series is over in South Africa, but the ODIs are getting underway soon. Loads of cricket going on, and we'll be back with you again very soon to talk you through it all.
All the best, mate. See you later.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.